Thank you, Chairperson. The question that arose was just to put into perspective the transitional forum and how it came to be, the various numbers, and also it related to the powers and what it ought to do. But let me deal with the first aspect. I think that the rationale for the way in which the various entities are listed has been slightly different to the Permanent Council was for this interim consultative process to be as broadly representative of all the vested interests within the legal profession. And so in having to designate that, you will see that when it looked at the attorneys and by name, it specified Law Society of South Africa, although it's a voluntary association, Black Lawyers Association, NADEL, and then the four statutory law societies. And it was specific so that no one is excluded from the process. And similarly with the advocates grouping, it went beyond just the GCB. It included the National Forum, the National, now we know the National Bar Council of South Africa, and then the National Forum of Advocates. And so that is the reasoning for why you have the names of the various entities, and also from a position of having to plot the way forward towards the Permanent Council, this parity in numbers at this consultative stage. So there isn't a accusation of a particular grouping that might possibly have an influence on the end product, which is going to be determined equally in terms of the main groupings within the legal profession, that being the attorneys and the advocates. So that was the thinking, and that's how the numbers came up. But I'll just clarify that aspect.
Maybe we should ask the department just to engage with the advocates again, because I was going through their submissions again, and they indicated that the GCB advocates for transformation are represented in the GCB and should not be represented individually in the Transitional Council. And there's another submission that says the advocates for transformation, this is the, I think the GCB or the Johannesburg advocates of case, yeah. There's no need for separate representatives from the National Forum of Advocates and Advocates for Transformation. The General Bar Council represents the advocates in practice. So we just need some guidance, because I suggested that earlier, but the same would apply to the designation of the National Forum of Advocates. When I believe it as it is, I don't know what the answer is. We've now changed the one. Should we change the other, or should we just leave it as it was, five advocates, one? I'm not sure which what the answer is, but I think it's again, as the attorneys reached agreement on their representation, maybe we should just look at talking to the advocates again, saying this is we're not changing the total numbers, but the composition, because of the basis of the assertion that the General Council of the Bar already has got a 50% representation of the progressive groups, where that is both Advocates for Transformation and the National Forum. I don't know. My understanding was it was Advocates for Transformation are 50% represented, but the Advocates for the National also represented, whether they are formally represented or not, but just might be because of their membership of the bar. Maybe that might be the issue. It's not a major issue. I mean,
Jeff, the general counsel of the bar excludes the National Forum for Advocates. It excludes independent advocates. They are not represented in that structure. And what the committee has also considered early on was to look at the six advocates from the General Council of Bar, three of which would now be asked, and it's specific in that regard. So that deals with the Advocates for Transformation issue. But certainly, I'm well aware that the National Forum, nor the National Bar Council, ACA, are not part, and the GCB does not represent them at all.
Can I just ask if my assertion that the Advocates for Transformation are 50% of the GCB, is that correct?
Yes.
Are you going to take that matter of fact? Because otherwise they might have undue representation under Roman 2, if I'm not correct.
They are 50%.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Provided that point has been dealt with, I just want to return to the thing that I'm seeking an answer to. And I took you to clause 97 because it flowed for me from 96. and I asked the question, why on earth does this consultative forum have to look at an election procedure for the purposes of constituting the first council? And the answer that I couldn't remember was quite simply that each of the provincial attorneys' formations has different election procedures, some of them running into six painters. So it seems to be the attorney's profession in particular that has a difficulty with electing its own delegates. Apparently so. And that's why an election procedure is one of the tasks of the consultative forum. I would suggest that, especially given the fact that it seems to be a difficulty of the attorney's profession, when we get to clause 97, I will suggest that Roman 1 should be an election procedure for the purposes of constituting the advocates and the attorneys' chambers, or committees, call them what you will, of the first council. That's anyway going to simplify matters, because the advocates must invent an election procedure for their committee or chamber, and the attorneys must invent one for their committee.
Assuming that we're
going
to.
Yes. By the way, could I just throw in here the idea that we really ought to have a judge as the chairman of this consultative forum? It makes it better. So all officers of court having difficulty in uniting their interests. And I mean, I can think of one or two judges with real leadership skills who would just help this process along wonderfully. Conceptually.
On 96, 97, 1A1, you will note that what Mr. Bassett did during one of the sessions ask whether it should not be an election procedure for the purpose of constituting the council, and not necessarily the first council, and also the Roman numeral 2, establishment of the reason. that election of Placidia continues, so that we don't have a completely different Placidia again having to be reinvented once the first council and the first regional council terms are extinguished by a fraction of time. The safety net, of course, is that the council reserves to itself an inherent amendment procedure. So it could at any stage, if it deems it necessary, to make some adjustments. But if this particular consultative forum is going to be spending 2 years consulting, and one of which is to do a procedure, they will come up with something that is terribly, terribly acceptable, and that should endure.
Mm.
And that is something that the team might want to consider, whether dropping it first would not give more certainty and perpetuity in that sense.
I'm not saying that the procedure would last forever, but sort of, first constituting the word first drops out, and then the council, and that by implication means yes. But we haven't done with 696, have we? This is the point I'm trying to make.
I was just trying to explain why I couldn't do with 96.
Right. Is there anything else on the 96s that we should look at?
Yeah, there was. We've taken the word nominated out of 16.1A1, and there's also a question mark whether it should be designated or elected. My feeling is that probably in this situation would have to be wouldn't it be designated, because you're designating the people, you're not nominating, and there's no election procedure in place to get the councillors or the transitional council in place, so maybe it should just be designated.
No, when they've elected, they will designate.
Okay,
if they choose within themselves to elect, that's their choice.
Okay.
But having completed that electoral process, they then designate. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on 96, just for clarity, members will recall for the council, composition of the council was also one teacher of law, and then the question arose, and I think for the council it was suggested that there should be two teachers of law, one from the South African Law Deans Association, and the other one from, and the name I cannot remember, representing teachers of law, not deans of law, Law Teachers Association. So the question arises, is it going to be one, or is it going to be two, like as has been proposed in the council? And if there are two, then one would represent the deans and the other would represent the teachers. Yeah, and then we would have 22 members, Mr. Dyer is saying.
Yes.
22 members of, yes.
I think if you look at 97.1A5, I mean, one of the critical things is going to be recommendations on the practical vocational training, and the candidate attorneys must, or pupils must apply before they can be admitted. And I would say that, you know, integral to that is also their qualification at university as well, to whether they're going to be able to do what they need to do there. So I think 2 would probably be a good idea.
So we'd replicate what is in the council.
Yeah.
And then the rest of those provisions, and the two persons who are to be designated by the minister are subjected to subsection 2A, the new 2A, which we have already discussed, the same as the council. It's the ACASA model. May not be designated to be a member of the transitional council if he or member of minority provincial legislature is council office bearer in a left of the party.
Do you mean only public representatives or elected positions, or do you, or what about staff of this party?
Is an office bearer under C, is an office bearer or employee?
Chair, the constitution of the body, there's that alternative option for subclause 2, the need for the TC to reflect broadly the racial and gender composition of South Africa, representation of persons with disabilities, and regional representation must be considered. Again, we sit with a situation, how is this going to be done from a practical point of view when the designation is done? We have the same question that was posed for the council. How are you going to ensure that you have all these criteria in place, that they're complied with during the designation stage? And there doesn't really seem to be an answer for that. And the question also arises, must be put in, must be considered as far as practicable, as we have done.
Yeah.
Chair, just under E, one person designated by the board who may not be a legal practitioner. Now, I don't really remember why we said it should not be a legal practitioner, because the board only consists of 5 legal practitioners, 2 accountants and 2 ministerial representatives. And I think this might be inhibitive to say that. Surely it's up to the board who they want to designate. We haven't limited the other nominees.
Chair, it doesn't have to be a member of the board, it's a person designated by the board. So
if the board chooses someone who is a legal practitioner, then it's just a problem?
No.
Yeah.
I feel it would be inhibited 2 ways. And you could say we may not be a legal practitioner, you know, which, and then they cannot be.
You could take that out.
Yeah, can't we rather say that who may be somebody who is not a member of the board.
Why don't we leave that to the board? We've not.
No, it's
the same in other
categories. No, we haven't. Hey. So we leave it, let's be consistent, let's just say designated by
the board. And if they choose someone who is not a member of the board, so be it. Okay.
As long as it doesn't preclude them, that's not anything.
As long as it doesn't what?
As long as designation by the board doesn't imply that it has to be a member of the board, that's not saying, you know, we don't, if you say you could be
a
member.
If they choose a member of the board, it's their decision.
Yes.
If they choose someone who's not a board member.
I know, but what I'm saying is that it not be interpreted, as if you say designated by the board, is there no way that it can be interpreted that it has to be a member of the board?
Well, if they're stupid enough to interpret
it, then it's their own problem.
But the same applies to all the parties.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. Duration of the transition, or the new name, is 3 years, Mr. Bassett. It ceases to exist on the date of commencement. Now, sub 3 across the folder. Yeah? It ceases to exist on the date of commencement of chapter 2. But you say the duration of the council of this forum is 3 years. Which is it?
What's the other one?
Mm-hmm. This is right.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's going to be extended. I just have to find the clause.
Okay. So it shall not go beyond the date of commencement of chapter 2.
That's
okay.
When the permanent council comes into operation.
But then it should say, but it ceases, or however. So, okay, am I right?
I have concern about some.
It'll come to you, Debbie.
It was something to do with the 2 years, because there was an extension of, one period that it could not be longer than 2 years.
Okay.
Is 3 years not too long? Because I remember we were told that GCB came back and said we can do all this in 6 months, and they even wanted to skip the transitional council, especially now that it's a consultative
forum.
No, exactly so, and the two professions once again couldn't agree.
It's the maximum thing.
But in three years.
No, let's give them 2 months.
They can do it in a shorter period and then say we're ready to proceed. Okay? Nothing prevents that.
So we really mean not more than 3 years.
Not more than 3 years. Am I right, Mr. Clark?
No, that's
right.
The relevant extension period is contained in 1997-4. 1975, the minister may extend the period of 24 months across the burdens of section 1 and 2 if he deems it necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think the committee is saying, notwithstanding, there should be a max period.
Yes.
Well, that's
for 3 years.
That is the way it reads. That was my thought, that the 24 months could be extended, but it's only subject to the 3 year max.
Yes, the maximum is 3 years. Okay?
No.
So, effectively, they've been given 24 months. Effectively, and if at the end of the 24-month period they still haven't reached agreement, then they'll obviously go capping down to the minister and say, please extend it. Okay.
You can only extend it for 1 year.
1 year, not no further.
That's fine.
Yeah. What do they call it in Britain or in America when you waffle and waffle and waffle, hoping that the time will expire? Filibuster. Monks who are men of peace and
I think the Cape Town.
I didn't look for that.
So that's
he says in the letter that he's laid up.
But he's very
ill.
Yes, he says so. He says but what has happened in Tibet has inspired him
to write the letter.
Yes, he's been able to lift his arm.
He said, I think, in the letter that he was here.
He said he was here, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in South Africa, we can call it.
Yes.
All right, let's get back to the bill.
Before we move on, of course, my second one,
yes.
In Lemonade.
Yes.
We have now extended the numbers to an even number in the consultative forum. Is that an issue, or are we fine with that? Are we also saying then that the chairperson appointed would have a deliberative and
casting vote as well as deliberate?
We just need to make certain that we have that covered. All right, if it is there.
In clause 106.2, Chair.
Every person who is a member must be in consultation with the minister.
got that sent in to take it to the Lord's sway of the ministers. Then in the end, they've got the deliberative vote. Cautious about that.
This is the whole point.
No. Wait. We're talking about decisions of the council.
What are we talking about?
Appointment of the
chairs.
What you're saying is that.
If we've got a deadlock, and the chairman has the deliberative casting vote, then we need to be careful about the minister's role in the appointment of the chairman.
And my notes say that the Honourable Nathan said it should be returned to after, and that I'm going to be the meeting. But I honestly, I mean, the reason why.
Sorry.
Don't worry, I'm looking.
Surely, department, surely you're going to propose all these steps in the interest of achieving self-regulation, which you may not improve. And in the spirit of advice and self-regulation, the absolute ideal would be to put a bad condition and not to allow any undue executive quiet.
Which was the judge?
No, that's the different.
Well, why not?
We discussed it the other day.
Which was the judge?
So you could ask the Chief Justice, or could you have suggested yesterday or something else?
Ask the Chief Justice.
So this is it, for this particular temporary consultant, why not?
Yes, but doesn't that interfere with separation of roles?
No, this is precisely these other officers of court. The officers of course are under the judicial branch, under any and where the separation of power comes into play is where that already ministers get given unduly large influence. That it is the ombudsman's problem. It is pure and satisfactory to put judges at the head of any of these bodies, because at the end of the day, it is only the courts that can rule on the bar rules that they create, that they must enact. Only the courts that can really ultimately decide on the attorney's rules. That's part of the Competition Commission. We'll get that. But it is pure and satisfactory. They are officers of court. Under the common law, their rules, etc., go to court to find the adjudicator. It's perfect. And, you know, the Chief Justice, even before we did the 17th and the Superior, the Chief Justice already had 4 pages of functions already assigned to him under various laws. So there are lots of things he's asked to do that would be unusual. I think unusually
normally
appropriate.
Normally when judges are appointed, they do it. It's either by the minister or the president. In consultation with the Chief Justice. Hence my question to you, who's going to appoint the judge? You evaded the question.
No, your question is actually we dealt with the same thing yesterday, in respect of those other appointments, and there we made a read on the statute of the president of the
All right, Mr. Swart.
Yeah, that is one option, but clearly the other option is that the Transitional Council themselves elect. They have got representatives of the minister. I can't see they've got designated from their bodies on the Transitional Council. I would suggest that they elect the chairperson. I can't see the role of the minister, because are they then going to elect and then consult to the minister and does he then veto? That I think is an unfair executive.
Well, that's what it means when it says
exactly.
Consultation.
Yeah, it does. So you elect someone and then the minister vetoes that, and I think that would be that's the and so I would suggest that we delete the reference to consultation with the minister, and we allow this.
Well, it can be after consultation, which is simply a case of we have decided.
Yeah.
It's Mr. Dyer, and that's it.
That
merely a courtesy.
That is also the
yes.
Option.
Or a written
just
communication advising. That's it.
That's the other option.
Yes.
Yeah. That is
shared.
Yeah, I prefer that option myself as well. I mean, we've agreed on the composition of the body, then I think it's fair and reasonable for the body to elect their own chairperson. Maybe there can be after consultation, there's no compulsion to accept the preference of the minister. That might be okay. But I can't help escaping the thought that a judge is an ex-advocate usually. And that will tip the balance.
I wasn't going there, Debbie. I wasn't going there.
Anyway, I mean, seriously, I mean, I don't know how in touch judges necessarily are with the running of an attorney's profession. I'm serious.
Well, I've heard stories where judges sit on their bench and look at the young advocate and say, I don't recognize you. Well, what is it?
I don't see you.
Horror stories of that nature.
No, but I'm genuinely serious. I mean, with the greatest respect to judges, I'm not... They don't... Many of them haven't been attorneys. They don't know what it's like to run an attorney's
profession. I'm not saying that's what happens.
No, it does happen.
Okay.
Anyway, my other point is, my concern that I've had, and maybe I can't remember what exactly it was, but I know it was relating to 97, the section that said, yeah, 96.3, that said the duration of the transitional council is 3 years and ceases to exist on the date of commencement of Chapter 2. I think my concern was relating to the, is there not the possibility of a gap there somewhere between...
I thought I had raised that.
Did you?
Yes.
Did I miss that?
Yes,
okay.
You missed it.
Okay.
But seriously, Chair, if you allow the members to elect their own member, then you must do the same as I proposed for the council. If the chair happens to be an attorney, then the deputy chair must be an advocate and vice versa. And that's if one of the professions is elected. It's also, I suppose, not inconceivable that the academic, one of the academics.
Other academic can be the deputy.
The whole purpose here is to get the attorneys and advocates to self-regulate themselves.
So the academic is elected chair, and then an attorney gets elected deputy.
Well, that's a problem.
All right.
Devil's advocate. There must be parity, we must ensure that either of the two professions don't feel intimidated. I'm simply going along that same principle. If the one academic is elected, it seems fair that then the other one must be the deputy. Otherwise, one of the two professions is going to be up in arms. You raised the principle, I didn't.
Okay, I have an idea. What about... They will elect their own chairperson, provided
right.
that if the chairperson is either an attorney or an advocate, the deputy will be from the other of those two.
Yeah.
So if she's an academic, then it stays fine.
Okay.
I wanted to just make a point about why the department had put into the draft the need for the minister to do the verification. So, and it is for this reason. Don't you all know that the consultative forum transitional council was the compromise decision that forced the Department of Justice to introduce, purely because in the last 15 years the professions were unable to reach consensus on the key issues. Permit you will also know that the department is funding out of its budget vote the costs in total for the consultative forum stage. The committee is also reminded that, perhaps I should phrase it differently because it might sound terse. I'm reminding myself that the obligation to make certain that this process brought to fruition and finality once and for all is an imperative that has to be reached. And that's why built into this process are certain escape mechanisms for that, like there's an arbitration clause, because we anticipate that there will still be
deadlocks.
And there's also a built-in clause to deal with an extension period that limited to a maximum years. But again, the funding is coming from the department's vote. There's an obligation to make certain that it's achieved within the parameters that is contained in the law. And by allowing all the necessary groupings, statutory and non-statutory, to be part and parcel of this process.
in choosing the appropriate chairperson and deputy, that was the reasoning that the bill was sponsored in that fashion. And I thought I should just put that in context so that it's not something that the committee gets an impression that it was something that the minister wanted to just nearly really fiddle with. I just wanted to contextualize.
So theoretically, flowing from what you say, they could choose a chair who is obstructed. To the attainment of the goal of the poll. Mrs. Schaefer.
See, I think that's precisely the argument why we don't want it to be done by the minister, because that's exactly what goes to the heart of the independence of the profession. And if he's saying that the minister's going to be doing this, therefore he must control it, and he's paying, so therefore he can dictate the terms, that's precisely taking away the independence of the profession. And I understand where they're coming from on that score, but I don't agree with it at all. And I don't see, I mean, we're passing the bill, we're trying to make it as watertight as we can in many respects. There are time limits and deadlines and so on, and they will know, whoever the chairperson is knows that this is what the time limits are. And I don't see how they can be obstructed. They know, you know, they have to comply with the law, and I would hope that members of the legal profession particularly would, not that we can bank on it as we've seen some other examples, but not with lawyers. And I really oppose that idea completely.
If you take the composition of the Transitional Council and the fact that you've built in progressive bodies from the representative attorneys and advocates profession that are there, I can't see that, and the submissions that commit themselves from the Bar Council, from the Law Societies to the objectives of this bill, I can't see that happening. And so whilst we hear what Mr. Dyer said, I think that we are broadly in agreement with after consultation. It still gives the minister. Remember, he's got two representatives, voting representatives, on that transitional council. He's got other powers as well that we still need to address. The moment the board talks about dissolution. So you know, which we're going to look at as well. But I think that, as we've agreed, I think after consultation is sufficient, and it will go a long way to meet the issues related to constitutionality of the bill.
May I just put on record, I absolutely do not agree that this should be done after consultation with the minister. I mean, Mr. Swart's earlier proposal that they should be elected.
Fall back now, yeah.
Okay. Steve Swart's primary position is that they should elect their chair and deputy from amongst themselves. His fallback position is after consultation with the minister. I would most emphatically reject that, because Mr. Dyer's explanation is in fact remarkably frank, and it makes it clear that the minister, it's the worst of all arguments, is that I'm paying money, therefore I want to make sure that this thing goes the way I want it to go. It's almost as frank as an admission that in fact the minister making sure that he's pulling the shots, instead of this temporary body being a way to get people who should be self-regulated to self-regulate.
All right. That's one issue we've flagged. Are we still on 96, right at the end?
Okay. No, it's fine. Can you explain what part I'm looking at on that thing? Whether I can be said to others.
We can't hear you.
The point that you apparently discussed that I didn't recognize, that I didn't listen to clearly.
About the time.
Can I just ask succinctly, there won't be a gap between the coming into commencement of the Chapter 2 and the ending of this council.
Oh, I see. Well, it's quite. It can't go beyond 3 years in terms of what we have here.
Not more than.
Mr. Bassett and then will tighten that up to reflect that it will not exceed 3 years.
And then the Chapter 2 will then automatically commence then after the 3 years expire at the very latest.
Well, Chapter 2 could come in after 6 months.
I'm saying very late.
Yes. Sorry, so.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 119(3) provides. Chapter 2 comes into operation 3 years after double commencement of 10. So 2 comes 3 years after this consultative forum. or on an earlier day fixed by the president. I think that's, well, I think we're over perhaps optimistic, but it's usually put in.
Okay.
So that is the only difference.
Okay.
If it's earlier, then it's
later.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so it automatically comes in a less earlier.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And then there's still 97, what is it, 5, sub 5, this shaper, where after 24 months, they'll ask the minister to extend it. So they're actually looking at a 24-month period, am I right?
Yeah.
That's optimistic.
I don't know, because I think now they've got a message.
Yeah.
Okay, alright. It may surprise us. Alright. So, can we then move on to 97?
I mean 102.
102, are we done with 97?
No.
You see, that's what happens when we jump around so often.
Yeah, right.
No, I would please like an option. I'd like to persuade you, but the 97.1a, Roman 1, should read the election procedure for the purposes of constituting the advocates and attorneys chambers / committees of the council.
Alright, Mr. Bass, do that option and then...
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on the regional councils, in Roman 3, should read the composition, comma, powers and functions of the regional, of the first or of the regional council.
Mm-hmm.
The composition, powers and functions. Because, I mean, you can't leave this up in the air. How can you ask them to... I don't know, what are you expecting them to come up with if you say the powers and functions of the regional council? But it should be the composition, powers and functions of the regional. We know that the two bodies have different bubbles for the composition of the regional council. It's not sorted. And in the main body of the bill, what's my reference to the regional council? With the main body of the bill. Thank you. No. It's not. Oh, here. Council must establish regional councils. May delegate such powers and functions which, in the interest of the, are better performed at regional level. Minister must prescribe the area. Must carry out powers and functions as may be determined by the council or as set out in this act. Must be elected according to the procedure determined by the council. Must be constituted in such a manner so as to reflect the composition of the council. So it must be a mirror image of the council. Your draft of the council is 16 versus 10. So is that what you're saying, that the regional councils must also have an overabundance of attorneys, a disproportionate number of attorneys? Clause 23, because, you know, I mean, the bill runs ahead and it legislates.
Yes, but
so
why are you talking about 16?
Because this says, clause 23 says the regional councils must be constituted in such a manner so as to reflect the composition of the council as far as legal practitioners are concerned. And as we know, the final legal practice council.
Such a manner.
Yeah, whatever it means.
You said mirror.
This is, I think what it's saying is that the composition must be the mirror image of the composition of the council.
Yes, but that's not what the bill is saying.
No, but I think it is.
Is that what is intended, Mr. Bassett or Mr. Dyer? In such
it's a manner as
to
reflect
the composition
of the council.
Mirror.
Reflect. What else does reflect mean? It must reflect the
well,
composition of the council.
Reflecting the composition of the council means the attorney's profession and the advocate's profession must serve on the council. That's right. In equal in parity.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jolly glad to hear that.
Well, then, okay, what? Not in parity.
No,
the proportionality would be the same as in the council. That's what.
That's exactly it. It mirrors the composition of the council, which on the bill's version is 16 versus 10. and a few
others. Notice that it means that regional councils will have academics and teachers.
No, it limits to the regional council says in such a manner so as to reflect the composition of the council as far as legal practitioners are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, it'll only be legal practitioners really that are serving on
that's
the regional.
Not mirror
Yeah,
yeah,
doesn't mirror the
council, but it mirrors the legal on the thing. But now you see, now go back to 97. What this consultative forum is here required to do is to make recommendations to the minister on the establishment of the regional councils, their areas of jurisdiction, on the Bill's version, the powers and functions of the regional councils. And I'm saying it should also say the composition, powers and functions of the regional council. And then also, now all of this goes by recommendation to the minister, who presumably is going to make regulations, because this temporary body is not a regulator. It can't gazette rules. It's just a consultative temporary thing. So when it makes recommendations to the minister, that means he's going to make subordinate legislation, correct? That's what I'm trying to say. You see, part of the difficulty of this whole construct is, of course, now that you're allowing the minister to legislate on things which it is doubtful that you ought to be allowed to legislate, especially Roman fixed a fee structure for legal practitioners. And I'm sure that you will argue that that matter is urgent. I also happen to think it's urgent. But you're now allowing...
The structure is coming up.
It's coming up. Okay, thank you. All right.
Yeah.
Now, and the practical vocational training requirements?
Yes.
Out. When did we do that?
No, it wasn't.
There's two things that are coming up, the fee structure and all the requirements necessary for the implementation of
compulsory post-qualification professional development.
The committee on one occasion previously requested us to consider how do we reduce the responsibilities of the TC's, the absolute minimum.
Yes.
The ones that are remaining are crucial, we would argue, particularly things like vocational training and...
In other words, what we said to you previously was that the question of the fee structure and the requirements necessary for the implementation, etc., will be dealt with by the consultants.
And the reason we are leaving practical vocational is because the matter is considered urgent and cannot wait for 3 years, because we have too many unregulated, academically qualified.
Yes.
Enrolled but unregulated legal professionals in the system. Okay, but so it's clear that, you know, there might be a case there for the minister then making subordinate law on the basis of those recommendations.
Particularly to regulate what the difficulty, the huge difficulty of the question of pupillage. Article 12 is pretty regulated in the Attorney's Act, but we'd really need there need to be discussions on practical vocational training, particular reference to people.
Yeah, for the simple reason that you can get your LLB, be admitted as an attorney, and off you go. That's all. Yeah, all right. So I can see the case for that. But now, you know, in this instance, what's so weird is that you have preemptively decided, notwithstanding this, this assistance to the two professions to self-govern, you have preemptively decided that the final council is going to consist of 16 attorneys and 10 advocates, and you have said in clause 23 that the regional councils must mirror that kind of composition. Why are you doing that? Is it that the ministry wants a certain outcome? Why are you doing that if, in good faith, we are creating this temporary consultative forum so that they must self-govern? Why not let them decide on the composition of not only the regional council, but also the composition of the legal practice council? Unless we just we've already quoted to you Judge Jaspers and saying you can't make advocates to near partner, you just can't forget it. So the alternative is to, if you want to pre-legislate it, then put that parity into the permanent legal practice at council. The parity at minimum must be there. I would say also chambers or committees for the two professions. But, and the further alternative is to let this consultative forum decide the composition of the legal practice council. I suppose the answer is the attorneys want the 16 and the bar wants parity. But so why have you come down on the side of the attorneys?
It's fast.
We've already had this discussion.
We have.
And we agreed on parity. Or not bound by anything, but we suggested parity on the council.
Transitional council.
Well, on the transitional council.
On the council. Yeah. But that is, as it is already there.
Yeah, no, we haven't made the final.
No, we haven't.
We have.
Well, it was raised.
It was raised, we didn't agree.
It was raised,
no, it
and we said
decided.
We'd think about it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not decided.
Well,
and
okay.
Some of us have tried to tell you that there's a constitutional argument there, that Judge Jaspers would be. So I think it has to be a parity at minimum. I can't see why you can't give it this. I just can't see why you can't ask the two professions to, on this temporary consultative forum, decide also the composition in the further sense of whether you have separate chambers, separate committees. We know the two professions have two different views on it, but and if it must be we who decide, I say we put into the law that you have two separate chambers for certain purposes, by the way, because we've already solved the problem of the joint advocate Bassett is drafting that very pleasing clause, which is the kind of stuff that they should sit on together, and which makes them a unified regulator, because there's no case been made for a unified regulator yet. It was the clause that was going to ask the advocate to look at different forms of legal practice for the future. And that, you know, that justifies the existence of a unified regulator. That starts giving me some comfort. But why can't these people further deliberate on the composition of the permanent council?
Sure. All right, Mr. Bassett. Mr. Dyer, I'm going to hear you. Ms. Smith.
Mm.
I think in fairness to the gentleman and lady across the table, the goal is to convince all of us.
What do you say? I have to be with you.
Yes.
Will you allow me to say everything I've just said?
No. All of that you're talking to Mr. Bassett and Mr. Dyer, and as though we didn't exist, which tells us that you're not interested in our views, you're not interested in persuading us. That's fine. That's okay. It's fine. I don't have a problem with it. It means then I don't have to think about the ideas you put forward. When I sit down with Mr. Sibanyoni and Prof. Ndabandaba, and they raised these issues. I said, no, she spoke to Mr. Bassett.
No, I stand corrected, and don't I spend my life trying to persuade you and the Honourable and the Honourable Professor. So forgive me for a temporary lapse. But only the reason I addressed the gentleman and Ms. Lowen genuinely to elicit the answers. But no, I stand.
But just bear in mind that they don't decide.
No, quite so.
They may give you the answers,
no.
But at the end of the day, it's us that decide.
Absolutely.
And you may say, no, that's rubbish.
And
or we may say, actually, you know, we like that.
Yeah, and that is absolutely true in the case.
Please answer.
I think the declaration.
This issue has been flagged. in various forms. Here's the reality. The costing model is also dependent on the number that is constituted within the permanent council. If we don't put in a number, we could end up with a council of 75.
So the
we have a wonderful configuration.
We looked at the numbers that currently constitute the council. We took that into account and looked at what would be a reasonable number in terms of constituting a council of this nature, and that's how it came about after going and doing the research on the current regulatory bodies. So that was factored in. And then it came to the issue of the numbers again. And but for the reality of the overwhelming majority of attorneys as opposed to advocates in South Africa, the attorney's profession made a strong case out for that differentiation and made those submissions in the various consultative meetings, written submissions, and eventually it boiled down to this 10-6. Making up 16 in permanent council. And yes, it can quite correctly be said that there is no consensus on it, and that, as Swart says, well, and as Swart says, well, you know, there should just be this parity. But it then it brings us back to the drawing board of the legal profession, one that has really, really not been an easy road to go by. And you're not going to get consensus on it. And so, in terms of that reality of the numbers that currently exist, one has to factor that in to the way the council is constituted. And if the concern is that when it comes to any issue that is peculiar to the advocacy profession, then I'm certain, as we have seen, that within the constitution of the various committees, that could be achieved to create that parity plus one in favour of the advocates. Because the attorneys don't have that problem, and they have never conveyed that problem. It has always been an issue from the advocates' profession, and specifically the QCB can have that as well.
I was actually under the impression that the discussion around parity that we'd already had related to the final council, because we wouldn't have had the discussion on the transitional council because there is parity already. So I misunderstood that, and I would still then, if that is not the case, then argue for that parity. Because if we look at the moment, it's 10-6, 8-8, and we in fact are going to then increase the attorneys and reduce the advocates who stand on 8, we're going to reduce it to 6. So I think, Chair, that we just need to, you know, to consider that and bear in mind that we want buy-in from the advocates' profession. I wasn't part of the deliberations as to why those numbers would add up, but at the end of the day, it's a decision we need to take. And I think we need to see it as two distinct professions that we are trying to encourage to work together. And that if we have it at a transitional council level with representation from various progressive organizations such as the Advocates for Transformation that are represented on those advocates forums, why not have the same principle going through to the final council with parity, with representation? It's again designated from those bodies. So if you don't have that, how are we going to reach the level of where you want, where you've got an independent advocate, you've got national forum of advocates, plus to get to the six, the number of six, it's going to be very difficult. So, Chair, I would strongly urge that we consider that as a committee. That's the first issue.
The consultative forum.
Absolutely, and I think the numbers are there, but I think the debate moved on to ask the department to look at constitution of the legal practice, and I just tried to remind myself of the debates around that, and I thought we were talking when we were dealing there at that stage of the possibility, but if not, then I stand corrected. But then on the issue here of the transitional council, I just want to align myself with what Ms. Smuts has said about the option of the chamber. Now she's put it at the national level, which I would support, and thank you for putting that option in, but again I'd like the option, what I strongly argued as a fallback position at the regional council level. If we could put that option in as well, Chair, I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's the option that would go in clause 23 then.
Yes, that would be in clause 23.
That's very clear.
All right. The reason we're discussing it now in this is because Ms. Smith insisted on knowing why the consultative forum doesn't determine how the legal practice council is constituted.
Now, first on the point, I mean, I take the point that we may need some certainty regarding the composition on the one hand, but I don't think that the cost issue is going to be that much of a factor because the professions are going to be paying for it. So I can't see how they're going to create structures of 75 people on the council when they're going to be funding it. Secondly, I'm not fixed either way yet specifically, but it's not only the advocate's profession we also want buying, we also want buying from the attorney's profession. And if they're going to be seen to be in the vast majority of practitioners and being dictated to by a much smaller number of advocates on an equal basis, they might also not want to buy it. So it works both ways. but I'm kind of leaning more towards this chamber thing in that sense, that maybe if we're having the council as the overall regulatory body and perhaps maybe go with the suggestion of chambers at regional level, then we can have this council making the general principle decisions and standards and norms and whatever, and then maybe even at the level slightly below them have the different chambers making the day-to-day regulations and decisions for that specific practice. But I don't If we're not going to have the two chambers, then I'm not convinced that the advocates should be, because effectively they'll be overrepresented.
Chair, yes, I think Ms. Schaefer's touched on a point I also wanted to sort of remind members. This bill, to a large extent, we've made progress, or where we could make progress, to the outcome of quite a few concessions and compromises, and one of the aspects, and we've got reasonable buy-in from the attorney's profession, and to go and disturb that balance now on the composition of the council might lead to consequences that we don't really want to grow and take us back. And it is also a question of numbers, and we've said that in our comments as well. So that's where, just to confirm what Mr. Dyer said, but we must bear in mind the history of this board. Thank you.
Mr. Dyer, then you're listening.
Chair, and also yes for the drafting of the option clause. The option of chambers at regional level. Just further clarity, is it intended that these two separate chambers would be attorney advocate chambers, and in those chambers you'd have the other members of the council, the academics and the other designated groups that will fall into those chambers on either side in equal numbers? What is envisaged? And what are these separate chambers going to be doing?
Own affairs.
We're
going to have own affairs. You remember?
And general affairs.
Own affairs and general affairs. It's making this ugly comeback and speeding towards us like an express train. They'll have own affairs. So in their chamber at the regional council, advocates will have their own chamber, attorneys will have their own chamber, and within those chambers they will discuss their own affairs. Every now and again they will depart from these two chambers and meet somewhere, and they will discuss general affairs.
Because if the aim of the bill is to create a regulatory framework that deals with only two things, discipline and admissions. And remember, the TC, the consultative forum, is going to deal with a whole lot of other stuff, rules, regulations, all of those things it has to do in the two-year period. Okay? Because we don't want to settle the new council with it, because we want the consultative forum to deal with those issues, education and a lot, you know,
And so it's going to be dealt in that process and taken through.
Yes.
Now we've got the council. And if there's only two things that this bill is going to empower this structure to do, number one, discipline. Number two, ambitions. What is it that is different to that chamber entrenchment that can't work if they are together? I just want, for the purpose of drafting, to get clarity on that, because the numbers and all of those things, I'm not certain that I understand it.
Mrs. Schaefer.
No,
oh, sorry, Mrs. Schaefer.
No,
you're
the next, and that's exactly the point I wanted to speak to, so that's good. I mean, you know, having listened again to how you need the buy-in from the people and the tension between the two professions, I ask again what I asked last Thursday, why institutionalize the tension? It's better to bring together what people don't know about each other. Now you're building all that tension into one body. And the answer is terribly simple and practical. Separate them out. Give them each their own chamber or committee. There are things they can do jointly, like explore the wonderful possibilities of different forms of legal practice. But the crisp answer to your question, because I can see them sitting, both advocates and attorneys, on disciplinary bodies. Exactly what we discussed earlier. It's not just admission and discipline. The most important thing of all is the practice rules. Who's going to make the bar rules? Who's going to adjust them? Because if ever there was a case for something that needs a bit of revision, because, you know, there I think lies some of the problem with the high legal costs. The bar component, the bar chamber or committee, must deal with the bar rules. The old voluntary bars can't do that anymore because this bill now becomes the regulator, and practice rules are preeminently an example of regulation. But the advocates must do the bar rules, and the attorneys must do whatever their equivalent is. That's the very thing, in fact, that the Competition Commission ruled on. All the problems with the legal profession lie in those rules. They do. I'm a little later, I'll take you to what the Competition Commission ruled. It was on fees, on organisational forms, on work reservation, and on advertising. All the problems we're trying to deal with lie in the rule. Now, you must let, because they are self-governing professions, you should let the advocates at the national and perhaps at the regional council level do their own bar rules. And remember, they are subject only to the supervisory jurisdiction of the courts. The courts adjudicate on their rules. It has got to be the advocates who make their own rules, just as presumably the attorneys have to make their own rules. Although the Competition Commission comes into play with both, in fact, advocates and attorneys. So that's what they must do. We know there have always been differences in the bar rules of different bars. I'm quite sure there are radical differences in the provincial formations of the attorneys' associations, which are now going to be regional associations. I believe in devolution there. I think it's good if you allow people to have variation, variety, wherever they work. And the upper legal practice council should deal perhaps with, as Ms. Schaefer said, norms and standards. Maybe they should start the process. There may be a case for their doing uniform rules. They have to discuss the whole matter, whether it's desirable, as in Australia, what they've just started there, whether it's desirable to achieve absolute uniformity of rules, but it's for them to decide. And that should be decided in the bar chamber separately and the attorney's chamber separately. And the things they do jointly is explore the liberalisation. To me, it's just almost self-evident. You can't have a council with 16 attorneys and 10 barristers sitting there making bar rules, or the basis for bar rules. How can you have that? You can't have that. That's, I'm sure, half the reason why Judge Chesterton said you can't make them a junior partner. But, you know, the long and the short of it is you're institutionalising the tension. You bring them a car, and you push it, and you bring them a car.
Cheerful.
For clarity, is Honourable Smart saying that if the committee finally decides as one of the options to bring about that clarity, the parity, then that would logically mean there is absolutely no need then for any separate chamber?
No, unfortunately not.
She wants parity and separate chamber.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think, as I said, the parity is the minimum, but about over and above that, to me, it just makes me too logical, ordinary, common sense to have a separate committee with chamber for their rules.
Someone had their hand up.
Me, but I'm not sure what I'm saying.
Alright, it'll come to you. Ms. Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. For my own purposes for the drafting, firstly, as Raj asked, where would the other members of the council who are not lawyers then fall in?
They'll have to take a walk.
Okay. And thank you. And secondly, couldn't the council be constituted as one body and then have committees? I mean, it may have committees, but not these chamber-like committees. Just a committee for bar rules, a committee for all these separate, what do you call it, separate?
Own affairs.
Yeah. Wouldn't that solve your problem?
Yeah,
well, not really.
Yeah.
But the council may institute committees.
Yeah.
No,
I can anyway.
What you call them is not as important as what happened. But the committee clause at the moment, of course, doesn't do anything like that. You could insert a subsection A saying there will be a committee of advocates, but it must be composed solely of advocates to deal with bar rules and the regulation of the bars, and a committee of attorneys. And then the council jointly can sit on all sorts of other things. Yes, I think that is an absolute solution.
Thank you, Dave. You changed your mind. Mr. Swart and then Mrs. Schaefer.
So the attorneys have set out the model, and I'm speaking now about the option 23 at the regional council level of your attorneys chambers and advocates chamber at that level. Now surely we're not saying that, and we need to relook at the clause, that the regional councils reflect and mirror the legal council, because is the minister going to have a representative at every regional council? Well, surely not.
No.
So I don't understand what the objection is then to have the attorney from the constitution perspective, that you're going to have legal academics, ministers' representatives at the regional council. And if that is what the bill says, we need to really look at that. But the argument is made both in the GCB and the GCB at the national level, but the attorney's profession at the regional council level, to have an attorney's chamber and an advocate's chamber, and they say there are certain regional councils at the moment where there might not be a need for an advocate's chamber or there might not be a need for an attorney's chamber, depending on the constitution, whether there's a bar in existence at that area. So it's quite flexible, and that is why it's quite a nice model to look at that level, that they would then deal with disciplinary matters at that level without the council, which is the overriding council that has the regulatory power, having to go down and deal with that. And you've got your existing, one can mirror what is happening at the moment with your different provinces, and it will be very easy for the minister. You've got your statutory bodies already there at the council. They will then continue, link up with the GCBs at that area at a regional council level, but falling under the umbrella of the regulatory legal practice council at the top level. And that is in paragraphs 4.6 relating to section 23, where the attorneys set out their suggestion, and that comes from the Law Society, LPB 31. Chair, just for our consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Can we accept that there is no need for the regional council to mirror the
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, right. That's not going to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. And therefore, the minister won't have representatives at the regional council.
Right.
And I don't know about the academics.
No.
So it's only the attorney that had. And as Mr. Swart now pointed out, there'll be places, there may be places where there will be no attorneys.
No, I think it's
or, well, he said no attorneys. There may be places where there are no, then there may be places where there are no advocates. So for us to now set down here in clear terms how the regional councils must be constituted, you know, it's an exercise in the way I see it.
Are you referring to 97 or are you referring to that mirroring clause 23? Yeah. Because now, don't forget, I mean, the bill already in 23 says it must mirror the big council. It does, but only in respect of legal practitioners. It makes it clear it's not about lecturers and ministerial. It says that it has to reflect the LCA.
Reflect the composition, doesn't mean mirror.
All right, let's not, yes, it's language, but it must have the same composition in as far as the legal practitioners are concerned. So the bill already preempts that issue. And what 97 asks is the powers and functions of the regional councils must be addressed. And I just want the composition added in there to thrash out. I think it's the bars only exist where there are high courts. So, and I think you'll find that in the submission. So there are fewer bars than there are regional structures of attorneys. So the split into the two chambers at the regional level is going to be affected by whether there are advocates there or not.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I mean, I don't think we actually have in our own heads clearly what we want, quite frankly. And I wonder if there's not merit in actually getting a copy of the Bar Council rules to see what exactly they cover, because I don't think we've got that. If I have, then remind me. But what is the, I mean, there's certain things, there are a number of things I think that are common to both divisions. I mean, as far as ethics and things are concerned, there's, you know, it's pretty much uniform. So I don't see why those kind of issues need to be dealt with by separate chambers. Are there separate attorneys rules for every province? And I'm not sure that's advisable either. There must be certain things that we agree on as a basic principle that we want, you know, things must be done within a certain framework or certain basic minimums and so on and so forth. Now, I mean, until we know exactly what we want in these different chambers to do, then it's very difficult for you to draft it because we don't even know what we want you to draft. Now, I don't quite understand either what exactly that is. And I think we should need to identify that before we can go any further, because there's
right,
no point.
Let me ask this question. Forgive me for asking a very silly question. Who puts together the bar on this now? The GCB.
Mm.
In terms of this bill, has the GCB been done away with?
No.
In terms of this bill, is the bill saying the GCB must stop doing it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
No, Ms. Swartz. Is that a consequence? Is the bill now going to say prevent the bar from the GCB from doing its rules?
Can I clarify that?
Right.
This council will make the rules, but the constituent bodies that elect its members. GCB, next to the advocates, after and transformation, and the various attorneys in the various provinces, elect their members to this council. Remember that the voluntary associations still exist. BLA Natal still exist. LSSS still exist. These people that are part of the council are not in park here. They have a home. Their home is there.
Yes.
They're going to be part of these discussions,
right,
discussing and deliberating the rules and what your mandates are, so that when you come to the council, you're not on a frolic of your own.
Mandate.
So that's an unwritten reality of what's going to happen.
Right.
So when we talk about the various rules that needs to be done, it's happening in those forums. These people that are sitting on the council are part of those discussions because they must be informed. And then when they go to council, they will know what their mandate is when they go there. And that's the link, and that's the reality of what's going to happen. So it's not as though it's going to disappear. It'll continue to happen. And all that the council will do is in the manner in which it is constituted, it will then debate those.
All right, the smart for them is the smart.
Seven, let's be quite clear. What we're doing is to split regulation from representation, as every other comparable jurisdiction has done. The function of the legal practice board and all the regional councils is regulation. The reason the GCB and the bars remain is that they are voluntary associations, but their function is representation. They are, if you like, trade unions. Now they can lobby the people they elect onto the LPB, but it is the LPB that regulates. Rules are above any other thing the way in which the legal profession is regulated. Now, and that is what all of this is about. And I'll give you a few little examples, but they stretch back over the years. The requirement up until a certain point that you could not brief senior counsel without a junior was a bar rule. The requirement that junior counsel had to be paid 2/3 of the fee of the senior was a bar rule. Now those two have both, under the pressure of time, been amended. But there are many, I can make you a long list of examples out of articles and other things that I have read. Owen Rogers' article in The Advocate gives you about 6 examples. It is the bar rules that regulate the profession. And regulation now goes to this council. In the case of the attorneys' rules regulate the profession. And these are precisely the few examples that Christine and Julian have given us, which the Competition Commission refused to exempt from the competition law, include the professional fees. You remember that the attorneys have fee guidelines, and the attorneys stopped their members from charging the public less. They were not allowed to go below a minimum. The Competition Commission said that is anti-competitive, it doesn't serve the public interest, we refuse it. Another example was concerned organizational forms and multidisciplinary practices. The LSSA rule is that prohibits practitioners from sharing fees with non-practicing attorneys, and there's a prohibition on practitioners from sharing office with persons who are not practicing members. That is probably the result of the Attorneys Act. But that, too, the Competition Commission says is incompatible with the competition law. The reservation of work for attorneys, these are rules of the attorneys. The rules under this category prohibit practitioners from allowing or assisting any unqualified person to obtain payment for professional work that only attorneys may do. It's the IMF called sheltered work. The rules against advertising and marketing, those are attorneys' rules. And the Competition Commission said you can't do that. As long as it doesn't mislead the public, people must be able to advertise. Touting is something different. Now, the Competition Commission refused them exemption on all of these things, and the thing is in limbo awaiting this act. The attorneys have drawn.
What did you tell
us? They draw. The attorneys have drawn up, and that is what the whole bill is about. It's not true that the GCB will still make the bar rules. It is this council that will make the bar rules, and the regional councils. And I hope we do continue to allow people to have their own different bar rules at their own different bars, because they differ. In the Cape, at the Cape Bar, for a long time now, it has been possible to approach an advocate direct if it's an opinion you want. It's not like that at other bars. So they have different rules. And the question, to what degree do you want uniformity, I think is a legitimate question, but it's for them to decide. They're self-governing. It's the rules that cause the lack of competition. It's the rules that cause the restriction. The rules, these are self-governing professions.
we are, the one single thing we are doing is splitting regulation from representation. And the Legal Practice Council is the thing that will make the rules. It follows as the night and the day to me. I mean, that is what this body will be doing. And that's why, to me, it's so important that you have the separate committees or chambers. It must be advocate to do bar rules, and it must be, it's just logical in my view, and it must be attorneys who do attorneys' rules. That's how I see it.
So, Chair, the constitution of the GCB is attached to the GCB submission, and in that it's quite interesting that they've referred to the referral rule as part of their constitution, and that any associate bar that wants to join them must adhere to that. Now we are in our regulatory body, the Legal Practice Board, going to overrule the referral rule. So you see there is the potential for conflict already, which clearly the regulatory body will be the Legal Practice Council, and it will then override that rule in the constitution of the GCB. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm saying we're doing it by statute, and that will be the impact, and that's how conflicts will be dealt with. The point is that at the end of the day, the regulator, this council, will determine what the rules are, and if there's any conflict, as there is here already, with the constitution of that bar, of that voluntary association, the statute will prevail. And
yes,
that
yes.
We need to appreciate. Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah, I'll have my choice anyway. I mean, I still think it would be useful to see what the rules are, because that's the point, they're self-regulating, but the point is they've been self-regulating and they haven't changed the rules, despite the courts asking them to do it. And despite the Competition Commission ruling against them, they still haven't changed. So how do we now know that if they carry on self-regulating, they're going to change the rules anyway? So there's got to be some kind of, I mean, some of the stuff will be dealt with by statute. But yes, I mean, certainly the council will have to have the ultimate say over what is acceptable and what isn't.
I mean, we must not forget that the self-government is what we're looking for here. These are self-governing professions. We are not, as Parliament, trying to take away their self-government. I mean, that is the entire constitutional issue, is an independent profession. We can look by all means, look at their rules, but I think it's useful to look at to see how that has distorted competition. But analysts do that better than we can by reading the rules. Well, Owen Rodden was interesting on the subject, and there have been many writings on that. But it's not for us to say, oh, we don't like your rule. It is by the greatest exception that we do something by statute like this referral, because they've done nothing for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the other example was the contingency fee matter. Are there any others whatsoever? I mean, this Parliament legislated on contingency fees.
I think so.
We are about to do something about the referral rule, but I mean, it's not actually our job. They're supposed to make their own rules subject to the supervision of the courts.
So I don't want to ask
a set of rules. It's not with respect to your defense. It's not my job to say I don't like them. I may have a view, and I do have one, that their rules have been restrictive. But I base that view on what very experienced advocates themselves have said.
I'm not saying we must change the rules, I mean, as such here. Yeah. I'm just saying we need to look at the rules for the purpose of seeing what we think should be done by the council at the highest level versus what could be done at different chambers. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying we must change. But I mean, there are things like sharing premises and stuff like that. That's a rule. It's a stupid rule. They're allowed to share attorneys aren't allowed to share premises with other specialists. That kind of thing. So, no, I'm not saying we must change.
Yeah. Although that is the other thing that we are opening. But that, anyway, the long and the short, that is, in my understanding, Chair, that is everything that this bill is about. It's about a few other important things, too. But the regulation of the legal profession, and their self-governing profession, sits in the rules. And then
Now the other body, but we will discuss that later, in fact, the whole fee matter, it, when it becomes a regulator, the Competition Commission is also a regulator, and we will have to decide how exactly they coexist. There's a section of the Competition Act which feel it will probably fit into that.
Will the council not be aware of that and take that into consideration?
Yeah, but I suppose we have to be, maybe we have to be clear in the,
see,
in the
law.
We seem
to be wanting to preempt what the council is going to be looking at.
Yeah, no, you're right.
All right. So I'm convinced in my mind that when the council is constituted and sits down, Competition Commission's findings will be one of the many things they will have to look at. Right, obviously.
Yeah.
Similarly with the contingency fees judgment.
That's
another matter they will have to look at. Regardless of anybody's rules, it's law.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think what I was trying to say is that we must just make sure that the Competition Commission's jurisdiction continues. And but for that, I think we only need to look at Section 1 of the Competition Act. Because we don't want a situation where there's our new regulator, full blown, and they therefore think they needn't pay any of the rules. That's all I'm saying.
No.
You're right.
Competition, unless it's challenged, can the Competition Commission's findings be challenged? Unless they're challenged and they're overturned. Yes, but until then, they are bound by it. And so there you have it. You know, we didn't have to do anything. Question of fees and so on, that's already been decided. And whether it's the advocate's profession or the attorney's profession, they just have to... Yes?
The other question about that just arose to me,
and maybe if you want to think about it, is when so much work has in fact already been done by the Competition Commission, do we need that the proposed provision about the fee structure, but the issue is to me so difficult. I still don't know what we ought to do about fees, because something needs to be
No. Let's leave it to the council. We don't have to do anything.
No, you're
what's
right.
In the bill is sufficient. We've said to the council, look at the question of fees.
Okay.
They have it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I guess you're right. Is a fee structure the answer there?
Well, it's fees.
Mm.
It's a structure. It's how much silk can charge and how much a graduate attorney can charge.
That not in itself.
That's a structure. It's
yeah.
From top to bottom.
Does that not in itself conflict
with
competition law?
Well, it'll have to be in line with that. Quite obviously. Mm. That's one of the things the council will have to bear in mind when they look at the structure. And quite obviously, the members of the GCB and the various professions will make input. I don't want to deal with fees. I become heated when you talk about lawyers' fees.
But we do want something to be done about
it. I think the council will do that.
Body must be.
Yes.
For our drafting purposes,
yes.
One option. To come back what I
expect. Two chambers at the regional level, two chambers at the
national
legal
level,
practice council,
and the
council. It's not a decision, it's an option.
That's the one option?
Yes.
And if I heard earlier, the other option was that you could have committees structured for advocates.
I thought that was there, but fine, if you think you need to, because Mr. Lowe made the point,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I read it. But
it's
fine.
Those chambers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you feel you need to register,
whatever you call
it.
Yes.
What's important is what they do and the fact that only advocates sit on the advocate committee, only attorneys on that, and what they do is the rules.
It's an option.
Okay.
The other option, I think, was that we have the practice council at the top and then regional chambers. Chambers at the regional level as well.
Yes.
Yeah. we've been asked now to do two chamber option at the national level.
At the national level
and
at the regional level.
Yeah.
All right?
At the seat of the High Court.
Yes, because
yeah.
What Mr. Swart is saying, look, if there's no agreement with regard to the two chambers at the national level, then, yeah, his fallback position very strongly then would be then very, at the very least, at the regional level. Now, is there any more to be said, or can we proceed?
I just think we need to bear in mind that the Legal Practice Council is only set to meet about four times a year, so
well,
we need to bring that in mind.
I know, with all this discussion, in my mind, I'm saying you're all aware of this, so yes. The nitty-gritty will be dealt with at the Regional Council, if that's
certainly, as far as
they're
concerned.
Right. We're still on 97.
Chair, yes, I'm not too sure where we. Just to recap, we the TC must make recommendations to the minister on an election procedure for purposes of constituting the council. We're going to take the word first out. Is that
yes? That's what we've agreed.
And then the establishment of the first regional councils, the first will probably also have to come out there.
Yeah.
And the areas of jurisdiction, taking into account, this is for the committee's consideration, taking into account the factors referred to in section 23.2a, which we discussed the other day. Those are the factors such as not more than one regional council per province, the location of the seats of the High Court, mission attainment of the council's objects, the availability of resources, cost effectiveness and feasibility, interests of legal practitioners, regional needs, interests and sensitivities. So we're just making sure that those factors get taken in on board when during the TC process as well.
Okay.
And then in subparagraph 3, the powers and functions of the first will come out again.
Yes, Ms. Lowe, sorry.
So should we in Roman 3 insert the composition also?
Sure.
Ms. Smith suggested that.
Unless we write it into the bill itself.
Yeah.
I can't hear you.
Option maybe?
If we're having options for committees or chambers. As options in the main body of the bill, then we don't have to put it in here.
No, spelled out in there.
All right.
And fee structures comes out, as I indicated earlier, we were requested to try and reduce the responsibilities of the TC.
That's right.
The right of appearance of a candidate, legal practitioner, in court or any other institution.
Mechanism. Up, yes.
And the mechanism to wind up and then
go down to sub 2.
Sub 2 is important. The TC must within 24 months of the commencement of this chapter negotiate and reach an agreement with not, we've taken out the words attorneys and advocates professions, reach agreement with the law societies referred to in section 56 of the Attorneys Act and any other similar statutory bodies regulating the legal profession established in the former homelands. We might need just to tighten up on the wording there,
okay.
But I think that's what we intend to say.
Mm-hmm.
That was the request of the committee to clarify what is meant by the attorneys and advocates professions and that we refer only to the statutory bodies. And then we've also put in a paragraph B, the provisions of paragraph A do not preclude any non-statutory bodies or voluntary associations which are involved in the regulation of legal practitioners or matters dealt with in this Act from negotiating and reaching an agreement with the TC in respect of the transfer of their assets, rights, liabilities, obligations to staff of the council or regional councils. And that we've also requested to insert so that there is that possibility. And then there were no further changes to clause 97.
Okay.
On the issue of the arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
I see it's a may, but there was an objection
about the usage of arbitration, and the objection was that the Arbitration Act cannot be applied under these circumstances. Is it, were you able to look into that at all?
Sorry, no, I didn't look at that.
Maybe we can look at that and come back.
Was that in the comments?
Yeah. So I think it was the Lawser or the General Counsel of the Bar. Paragraph 40 of the GCB, the provision for arbitration is inappropriate as arbitration in terms of the Act cannot determine status, constitutional or otherwise, and the Arbitration Act cannot be a vehicle for compulsory arbitration. We just need to look at that and see if that is correct. It's page 20 of the GCB submission.
If I may, go on to powers and functions of the GC, clause 98.
Mm-hmm.
There were no...
Nothing there.
Nothing there.
Membership of the...
Of the GC. Chair, these amendments, these technical amendments are really in line with what we discussed this morning to bring about uniformity. Rather than talking about vacation from office, talk about removal from office.
Mm-hmm.
Chairperson and deputy chairperson. We were, well, we've just been asked to flag that, so we have discussed it now.
Yes. Yes, that still remains. That's flagging.
Okay. The chairperson of, in subclause 3, the deputy chairperson must, if the chair or may, if the chairperson is absent, I'm sure it should read must. That's just in subclause 3.
Yeah.
If both the chairperson.
That must be a must.
Must, yes.
Must.
Yes, these are really just to bring the wording in line with the previous wording where the other bodies, where the council was or the board. So if both the chairperson and deputy chairperson are absent from any meeting, the members present must elect a person from among themselves, not from one of their number.
Yeah.
And the person so presiding must, I think it should be and shouldn't be played. Must during that meeting until the chairperson and deputy chairperson resumes duties, perform all the functions and exercise all the powers of the chairperson. So I would suggest that it should be must.
Agreed.
The rest of subclause 5 is in line with the wording elsewhere, as is 6, as is 7. Term of office wasn't there, but it's been put in line with previous provisions. I don't know whether the committee wants me to go any further. And the termination of office has been aligned with similar provisions as far as wording is concerned. And the same applies to clause 102. I just want to see if there's anything besides the wording that's been changed.
That is awesome.
Yes, Mr. Swan.
Under 102, what happens if, I see it's a may, the Transitional Council may remove a member. What happens if they don't? Say another person is convicted of an offence, and for some reason they do not remove the person from office, because it's discretionary. Is that right that you should? I don't know what the answer is. But it should, it must, if it's a conviction for misconduct, and which in their opinion debars them from serving as a member of the Transitional Council. Just must on A, not necessarily all of them.
No, it couldn't be on all of them.
Just on A, must have a must.
And then we'd have to do the same where we've dealt with this.
I'm just debating the issue. It could be a very minor misconduct issue. So, but if it's a criminal, if it's a serious criminal case
for me.
Serious issue. What happens if it's a traffic fine? But I presume you've got to also bring that with you.
Chair, this is, we must recall that this is also going to be changed. The conviction for misconduct is going to be a finding of misconduct. The conviction is dealt with in clause 99, and we're going to do, we already discussed that this morning, how we're going to deal with the conviction. So in 102, this is going to be a finding of misconduct, not for an offence, but for misconduct.
Yeah. So I presume you're changing constitutional counsel all the way through, we don't need to.
We need to rearrange that clause, Mr. Justice. A finding of misconduct under this Act, and then it goes on, or a conviction.
Yes.
Mm.
Is that how it should read? Or a conviction?
For any offence, yes. Yes.
Chair, I think, and I've already done it because it's in the document that we're going to possibly discuss tomorrow. The problem here, let me just get it in the new document. I don't think we can refer to a finding of misconduct in terms of this Act, because we are talking about the Transitional Council. So there will not be any misconduct hearings in terms of this Act. So maybe what, and this is going to be discussed in the next set of documentation that we will be submitting. And it reads as follows, I might as well just read it now. The Transitional Council may remove a member from office on account of incapacity or... Yes.
Okay.
Why don't we look at it tomorrow? Why don't we look at it when you've distributed the document?
Okay.
Let's look at it. We stop here now. 2 minutes to four. Yes, it is. And because it's getting so hot, we've had a long day. And we, because we are a quorum, agree to the Human Rights Commission shortlist. As agreed to yesterday. Advocate Kutswana, Dr. William Gumede, Advocate Amir Mia, Professor Vinod J. Chan, Advocate Valerie Patane, and Steve Tedder. Now, Romano, we need to choose a date for the meeting. Will you leave that to me and Mr. Romano?
And public protection?
And the public.
What are we doing tomorrow? It's just 4 pages, isn't it? It's less than 4 pages.
We have the new bill, a new bill with the amendment from the beginning. But we're going to go through tomorrow.
From page one.
Can't we get the bar rules?
We'll start again. I don't know if we can obtain the bar rules. We can try.
Referred to issues that we asked them that they are collecting, the pro bono disciplinary matters, governance structures. We can ask them, you can ask them, when is that documentation coming? They say they're collecting it, and we should get it in due course.
Which is in when? In due course.
19 months.
Well, we could ask them how far they, whether the committee has asked them.
What's the date on the document?
It's June.
Yeah.
They said, no, they're not in due course. They said as soon as possible. They will be delivered to the committee as soon as they are complete. And that's the pro bono system.
Excuse me, the letter Honourable Swartz referred to, is it addressed to us? I'm not sure which letter you referred
to.
The department.
To me.
Oh, to the chairperson. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
no, you don't have to do anything.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, you don't have to do anything. No. You stay away from the mafia. Let them send it to us. Let them send it to us. Yeah.
Did you ask me for a copy of the bar?
Yeah.
Do you want a copy of my summary?
As usual. Not today, it's yesterday.